joined in studio by our friend Mike Toole. Mike, nice to see you.
Richard, it's so great to be here in the palatial studios of the Downtown with Rich Kimball show.
Well, you know, we try to spruce it up.
It's like
when
I step back
in
time. The 70s have called.
And hey, come on now. Is this, I don't know if this is the original paneling, but.
Yeah, looks it's close. Like it could be. Be that as it may,
yeah.
It's great to be here.
Yeah.
Thanks for having me.
Yes, it is. Yes. Absolutely. A new coat of paint on it, but yeah, this probably goes back to the
what is that?
60s.
Putty?
That might be. No.
I wouldn't want to start digging into it, put it that way.
We got the old reel-to-reel machine over here.
That's a museum piece.
Oh, yeah.
What that is.
Absolutely. Yeah. I miss the days of trying to edit with a razor blade.
Oh, boy, yeah.
Yeah, good times there.
You've been in the game a long time.
Too long.
Now, let me ask you, how many years has it been for Maine football?
Oh, Maine football. Well, on the radio, this is our 26th year.
Okay.
But yeah,
a little ways to go.
I did it on TV a few years before that as well.
Really?
Yeah. Okay. But I saw you are at the beyond 20, right? 21?
I think this is year 22.
22,
yeah,
wow.
Yeah. So my first game was the first game at Maine after Sean Walsh passed away.
Wow.
Yeah.
Holy cow.
So that was 2001, right?
Yeah. Now, was that with,
so I,
was
I
that working with
my
Dan?
21st season. I would have been working with Joe Carr.
Oh, wow.
Channel
okay.
5. Yeah. Yep. Yeah. And man, I'll never forget it. The first game, and I had no idea what I was doing. You know, never done TV before, radio before, anything like that. And back then, now we tape the open, and if you flub it,
right.
Take two.
Right.
Most of the time, we get it in one take, two occasionally, never three. Okay, but back then it was live, and it was Channel 5 that had the broadcast rights back then. And what was the producer?
John Bollier.
Yeah, John Bollier.
Yeah, he, great guy.
Yeah, great guy, and he was the producer out in the truck. And I'll never forget it. I'm standing there, and you know, the building is electric, and the lights go down. It's the first game. Maine's playing BU. It's the first game after Sean died, and it's just like, and I'm standing there with Joe, and I'm thinking, what have I gotten myself into? And then I hear John come on the headset, and he goes, okay, we're on in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Cue the talent. I went, what?
Who?
The talent. Okay, then once I realized, you know, we're the talent, well, then there was living with me, of course. But it was quite an experience, and Joe carried me for a couple seasons. And then you get the hang of it.
Right.
Right. You know,
but
there's a sort of rhythm to it.
You've been around Maine. I mean, you and I are about the same vintage. I mean,
you were
part of Maine hockey back in the Jack Semler days.
Correct. That is correct. I worked at the rink at Sharpen Skates. He's kind of a team manager kind of guy. Then I don't know how I lucked out, but I managed, and I got into reffing fairly early. Realized I wasn't going to make it as a player. And so I got into reffing and really got into it. And I started trying to, you know, when you start in reffing, you start it at both extremes, the real young guys and the really old guys. Okay. So working the little squirts and mites games.
Oh, yeah.
And then the cardiac league at, you know, 11:30 on a Sunday night, you know, for $20.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. And then you get into high school and so forth. And I get the idea I wanted to get into college. And so I went to every camp and clinic I could possibly get into and you know, shaking it. You know, it's so political.
Yeah, absolutely. Right?
You know, and so I was going to, camps down in Boston, and I actually would drive in the summertime. I would referee in this league called Pro Elite League, and it was for college players who'd been drafted by the NHL. And it was like a development league, and it was like a showcase for talent. And so if you were drafted by the Bruins, you'd play for the Bruins. And if you were drafted by Montreal, you play for Montreal. And so scouts would come and watch the players, and I caught wind of how to get into that league, and I got into that league, and it was a showcase for referees too. So I would drive down in the summertime every Monday night and, you know, time it so you can get, because it was in Hingham, the other side of Boston. So I would time it so I'd get there, avoid the traffic, and do two games, drive back.
Oh my gosh.
Did it all summer long. Of course, wow. You know, I was in my 20s and, right. You know, I'm an idiot. You know, didn't know better. And so I did that for a long time, you know, for a couple of summers. And I, you know, I tried at that time, I don't know if you recall, the Hockey East office when it first opened up was in Orono.
That's right. Yep.
Stu Haskell was the commissioner. Yeah. I had all kinds of contacts. I was getting nowhere. I was getting discouraged. And finally, I went to a camp down in Saugus. And the presenter at one of the classroom sessions was a guy named Dana Henniger. And he was the supervisor of officials for Hockey East. And like I always do, you go up afterwards. And I talked to Dana before, and he'd, you know, given me the Heisman. Thanks. Thanks. Yeah. You know, we're all set. You know, and back then it was a very Boston-centric league, right. If you remember. And so you had to have a pedigree, which I did not possess, until I went up to Dana after his presentation. Hey, Dana, Mike Toole down from Orono, Maine, blah, blah. Hey, Mike, how you doing? Where are you? You staying down here? I said, yeah, I'm staying in Melrose, my uncle's house, you know, my uncle, Red Murphy. And, you know, I'll be going back tomorrow. He goes, your uncle is Red Murphy? I said, yeah, my uncle Red and my aunt Peg. He goes, Red Murphy's your uncle. I went, well, yeah. Yeah, he goes, Red Murphy is your uncle? He goes, that son of a, he and I got in so much trouble together when we were kids, and we got arrested for breaking windows at the Lincoln School, and his old man came down and beat the crap out of him, blah, blah, blah. Next thing you know, I'm getting a full schedule.
So you know,
true story.
Yeah, there you go.
Well, you know, it's who you know to get in, and then it's, you know, you have to have a certain level of competency, I'd like to think, to stay. And I managed to hang in there for 12 years. So, yeah. And then it was on to this, and I was fortunate that the station manager at Channel 5 at the time was a guy named Mike Young.
Yeah.
He was a client. I was, you know, working at a local investment firm. And he asked me one day, hey, say, Scott Smith was our TV guy doing color. He's moving away. Would you be interested? I know you've been into hockey and you're retired from reffing. I went, sure. Yeah.
Why not?
Yeah. I had no idea what I was doing, you know, and got a chance to work with Joe. I worked in the studio on a couple of things with Tim Throckmorton, and it was an epic bomb, but, you know, they didn't have anybody else, so right. You know, they decided to see if the kid could play, you know, let him, you know, like Mac Jones kind of thing, you know, just keep throwing him out there, and eventually maybe it'll turn around. And so anyway, so I think I'm on my fifth play-by-play guy now.
Wow.
Yeah, started with Joe. Joe left and went to Providence. John Small from the news.
Oh, yes.
Came over for the rest of that season and the next. It was great working with him. And then Dan Hannigan came over from radio.
Yep.
And then it was somebody else in between. And now it's Jeff Mannix. And Jeff's great. I don't know if you know him.
Oh, I sure do.
Yeah.
Jeff used to work here.
Oh, right. Okay, yeah. Sure. So Jeff is such a pro, and he's all about this.
Yeah.
I mean, this is his life.
Right.
He comes totally prepared, which means I can skate by with high level knowledge, and he's got all the details. But he prepares the, you know, the stat package, and he does all the, you know, what we're gonna do for graphics and so forth, you know, in the bottom of the screen, and the lower thirds and all that. And a lot of times he will do a Zoom interview with the opposing coach during the week and tape it and send it to us, and so it really is helpful in. So it's great to be. It's really my only involvement in hockey, other than after this, I'm going to swing over to Sawyer Arena and watch my grandson, you know, with the little Maine Junior Black Bears. But my only involvement in hockey now is doing it on TV. We're on ESPN Plus now, so we're doing every Maine.
Right, that's
every
you're Maine doing home game. All the games. That's great.
Blessing and a curse, by the way.
Yes,
okay.
Absolutely.
So the blessing is. What we used to do was we would do 7 or 8 games a year, and we do a couple of games at the beginning of the year, which is always so stressful because I don't even know the teams. You know, Maine's all new players. You haven't seen them yet, and then they're playing, you know, they're always playing a non-league opponent early on, so it's not as much information available about them. Or, you know, there is, you have to go digging for it, but you haven't seen them in person. You don't really know much about them.
Right.
And then, you know, we're done by the middle of November, and then we don't see him till the end of January. A lot of times, the way the schedule works, the TV schedule. Well, now I think I've done 5 or 6 games already. And, you know, it's like you get into the rhythm of it and it's a flow and, you know, but, you know, it's a little more work.
There go your weekends.
There go your weekends. And I have a real appreciation for, I mean, I always did when I knew Dan, you know, did all the road games and so forth. Well, John Shields now, I mean, that kid, you know, he's all over the place and you're really married to it for, you know, for 5-6 months.
Well, that's the thing. It's such a long season. Football, at least it's once a week and usually it's a home game, then a road game. Now this week we're our second road trip in a row, but that's it. Yeah.
Right. This is definitely more of a commitment. You're doing 34 games and that's if the team doesn't go any further, which they haven't, but we're getting close.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, let's talk about the team. Sure. Mike Tool is with us here in studio. Ben Barr at the helm in his second season here. And there's some excitement, I think, about the team. And already there have been some high moments. There have been some disappointments. But it's, I think, part of the growth process and the learning curve.
No doubt. This is not unlike Sean Walsh's first 2 years, by the way.
Right.
I think Larry wrote about it this week, and he's absolutely right. Sean inherited pretty much an empty cupboard. And then had to rebuild. It takes time. You have to instill a culture. That's exactly what Ben Barr has been doing. He's been instilling a culture. The team, even though the results aren't there yet, I think they're 2-6-1 on the year. They're in every game. Okay, and it's never really been a question about effort. They've always, you know, even Reds teams that weren't that successful, very rarely did you come away from a game thinking, man, that was not a great effort, with the possible exception of the 7-1 loss against UNH, the one game that they played home in the pandemic home playoff game. That was ugly. And that was surreal, by the way. And that kept my streak alive because we weren't going to be doing any games that, and we got the call like the week before. Maine's got to host a playoff game. That was bizarre. No fans in the stands. Mm. And Jeff and I are sequestered in a secure location, wearing masks, no monitor, headsets went down, so we had to do one of these things where we could, you know, even hear each other, and it was, anyway. So, this year's team, much better. Now, I know it doesn't really look like, you know, the results are there yet. They're not there yet. They have a thin margin for error. That's and Coach Barr characterizes it that way. And let me also say, our meetings with him are very informative. He's thoughtful in his answers, very forthcoming, to the point where I said to him privately, you know, some of the stuff you're telling me, you know, you might not, I'm going to honor, you know, what you're telling me is maybe it's, I shouldn't, you know, I should protect you a little bit, you know, but he's brutally honest. Last year, he was brutally honest about, you know, his assessment of the team. And he is this year too. Not critical of individual players, but just the overall things that he saw that needed to be cleaned up. And clean up is really the best word for it. So this year.
And sometimes, too, you know, the guys may have plenty of talent, but they just don't fit the system that a coach wants to do or the culture that a coach wants to create.
Well, nice try. I think there just was a lack of talent. But you're right. This year, the talent level is much higher. What they're lacking is finishing off around the net. They're generating offensive chances. They're pretty much, a lot of times they're out shooting their opponent. They're getting quality scoring opportunities. That's shots between the dots, by the way. We refer to those as high quality scoring opportunities. Sean used to call them grade A's. And, you know, whatever. Those have more likelihood of going in.
Right.
Okay. But the shots from outside can go in if you get traffic. And that was not happening last year. They're getting traffic this year, but Maine is still upside down, meaning they score an average 2.1 goals per game and they give up over 3 goals per game. They're going to play Merrimack this week, number 4 in the country, 4 in the conference, 5 in the conference, 19 overall.
In the country, yeah.
They're right side up. They average 3 goals a game, only give up 2. That's what you need to get to. And I think Maine, if you can get your power play moving in the right direction, then that's how that's going to get fixed. 5-on-5, I see them getting a lot of opportunities and so forth, but they are not cashing in on their power play opportunities. They're at 9%, something like that. Mm-hmm. And you're your special teams, I call it the 80-20 rule. And I don't know if I coined it, but I mean, you know, the 80-20 rule is a well-known principle, right? But when you apply it to hockey, I say the 80-20 rule is your penalty killing has to be at least 80% proficient. Your power play has to be at least 20% effective. Maine is 9 and 88. You know, their yep. penalty kill is good, and it has been good for some time. They take pride in it, and that's wonderful, especially given the amount of penalties that they've been taking the last few years. Now, that's come down, too, and that's, you know, that's something that needed to be, you know, addressed, and it has been, and that's better. But it's really finishing around the net. Those you're going to get 3 or 4 opportunities a night on the power play on average.
Right.
You got to cash in on 1 or 2 of them.
Yeah.
And if you don't, your margin for error goes way down, and that's where we are.
What do you think of the freshmen, the group that Coach Barr brought in?
Yeah. So especially on, well, there's the freshmen, there's a line that he puts together a lot of times. Keeker Olson, Thomas Friel, Reed Pabich. Now, Felix Trudeau is back, and so I've seen him on that line against UConn last week. And they look legit. You know, they're getting chances. They have skill. They can all skate. So Maine's speed level has gone up. Their skill level has gone up. The more impressive thing, the more impactful thing, I think, for them so far has been the play of their defensemen. So, you know, you've got Jacob Sirota back there, who's a grad student and veteran. He's playing like a veteran. David Brazil last year was a surprise. He's a sophomore. He's improved. So you got those two guys as upperclassmen. Everyone else are freshmen. Mm. You're skating 4 freshmen on defense. A lot of nights you're skating 8 or 9 freshmen overall. And the way their defensemen move the puck is so much more, let's call it purposeful, less banging it around. What I notice is they can escape forechecking pressure. You've got to beat that first forechecker. Step around them, take a couple of strides, and then make that purposeful pass out of the zone. So Maine comes out of their zone a lot better than they did a year ago. A year ago, they were expending so much energy just to gain their own blue line that it's no wonder that gave teams time to get back. Now you're never getting odd man rushes, and so that is definitely improved. They've just got to find a way to click on the power play, and if they do that, their goals per game are going to go up. Their goal differential is going to start to swing in a positive direction, and then, you know, the goaltending's been criticized a little bit this year, but Victor Osman is 2.42 goals against, 9.15 save percentage. Those are good numbers. You get below 3, you're good. Below 250, that's really good. Yeah. You get down around 2, you're, you know, in Jeremy Swayman, category. Maine has played some ranked teams this year.
That's right.
Northeastern, Quinnipiac, UConn, and they've hung with them. Denver. Mm-hmm. They've hung with those teams. Their goaltenders have kept them in it. But when your margin for error is so small, you turn the puck over in the neutral zone in overtime against UConn. You know, you got a scoring rush the other way, goal scored, game over. Well, that's what happens, you know.
So. When do we see you on TV again?
In a couple of weeks, yeah. We're going to do the American International game on the 26th.
Excellent. Mike, yeah. It's great to see you, as
great
always.
Great to be seen. It's great to be with you guys. Yeah. Thanks for having me.
You bet. We'll see you again later on in the season.
Sounds good.